Hello, this is Paula Kaufman with the Herald and Review for Thursday, August 17, 2017. We'll start with an article on the first page, headlined, New Year, Fresh Start. Decatur teachers, staff, and students enjoy smooth first day. By Valerie Wells, Herald and Review. Decatur. Brenda Heron retired at the end of last school year, but she was back on Wednesday, as she had promised, to greet the Garfield Montessori School students on their first day. "I blame my plants," said Heron, better known as Peanut, who served as the building custodian for more than 20 years, beginning when it was still John Adams School. "I have to come in and water them and check up on my kids." Her kids are the students, many of whom are second or even third generation Garfield students, who were so glad to see their Miss Peanut that they gave her bear hugs as they entered the school. "It really is a family here," Heron said. Decatur students had a smooth first day back, with a few tears from small students, but, Garfield Principal Mary Anderson said, none from parents that she saw. A new bus service, Alltown, is transporting students this year, and Anderson said she was impressed with the drivers and the buses. The first day of school is usually a bit chaotic, with kids trying to find their way around, parents either celebrating or weeping over handing their youngsters back to the daily routine, and new staff figuring out who everybody is. Owen Connolly's two children attend Hope Academy, Sierra in seventh grade, and Braden in first. "I felt good taking them to school," Connolly said. "It's a big weight off my chest, actually, being a single parent and having a break." Sierra's been at Hope for 2 years, and this is Braden's first year there, and Connolly said he thinks his son was more excited than his daughter for school to begin. "Today is full of emotions," said Jonathan Downing, who was principal of Parsons School until June, when he took a job with the Illinois Education Association. Besides the professional financial growth my new job brings, the top reason was being able to do this, taking a more present role in the lives of my children. This is the first time he's been able to take his daughter, Nolani, a seventh grader, to school on her first day. And this year, she was accompanied by younger sister Emmeline, who began kindergarten. Both girls attend Garfield, and their mother, Aubrey, teaches there. One brother is off to Millikan University this year, and the other is a junior at MacArthur High School. "The best thing about working in education is the start of a new school year," said new superintendent Paul Frigault, who spent Wednesday visiting buildings. "It's an opportunity for a fresh start. The first day of school comes with lots of excitement, meeting new faces or reconnecting with familiar ones. We can't wait to have our buildings filled with staff and students again and are ready to work towards making some great strides for a successful school year in Decatur Public Schools." Parsons School has a new principal this year, Trish Paulson, who said the first day couldn't have gone better. Buses were on time or a little early. Kids were ready to come to class, and other than a very brief issue with a copy machine early in the day, things went well. "It's the same every year, getting new kindergartners in, showing them around the building, explaining our positive interventions and supports expectations," said Rod Prang, principal of John Hill Magnet School. "The buses will get a little faster tomorrow, and a little faster the next day, and on Monday there'll be no problem at all." Liz Harding and some of her fellow teachers at Johns Hill went to a conference over the summer and were inspired to try non-traditional classroom seating. In her third grade room, she has exercise ball chairs, swivel chairs, stools, cushions, and cocoon chairs, which have folding canopies that allow a child to, basically, disappear into the chair. "We can go from whole group to individual groups in about a second's time," Harding said of the new configuration. "It's leveled. I tried to make sure there's ground level, medium levels, the idea of being able to stand. It's a way to kind of keep them moving so they're working at the same time. The exercise balls take a bit of getting used to. One child scooted off his and ended up on the floor, but he just laughed about it and climbed back on. Those seats and the ones with an exercise ball in a frame with a back on it give the kids a squishy seat, as Avery Harrison, 8, described hers. Avery and classmates Alina Folmsby and Summer Bond, 8, sat together at a low table doing worksheets. All three said they approved of Harding's new classroom design. Harding said she had been a little worried that the kids would think the bright colors were too kindergarten for them. But the girls didn't feel that way at all. I liked the colors, Elena said. Summer, like her friends, said she was ready to come back to school. I spent all summer playing with my dog, she said. He wants to play fetch all the time. House rejects Rauner's school plan. Amended bill could still face override by August 29th deadline. The Associated Press, Springfield. Illinois schools continue to wait for funding after House lawmakers soundly rejected Governor Bruce Rauner's plan for a new public education funding method on Wednesday. The House voted 60-0 against legislation that encompasses the changes the Republican governor made in an amendatory veto. Rauner vetoed a school funding model he said unfairly favors Chicago schools and hinders state funding flexibility. The Senate voted to override the veto on Sunday. An override is less certain in the House, so State Representative Will Davis, Democrat of Homewood, put Rauner's veto language into a new bill to gauge support. Republicans called the vote a sham because of the lack of override support. There were 33 present votes. The defeat of the amended legislation still leaves the possibility of a House override. The deadline is August 29th. House Speaker Michael Madigan, a Democrat from Chicago, said the House will attempt to reverse the veto next week. While all three Decatur area representatives were present in the chamber, only State Representative Bill Mitchell, Republican of Forsyth, voted. He joined 32 other representatives in voting present, while Representative Sue Shearer, Democrat of Decatur, and Representative Brad Holbrook, Republican of Shelbyville, were among the 25 who did not vote. Mitchell said Wednesday afternoon that the bill voted on was simply political theater by House Speaker Michael Madigan, Democrat of Chicago, to embarrass Rauner. Even with the action, Mitchell said he was still relatively upbeat that the leaders can reach a compromise in the coming week. Madigan had his little fun today on Republican Day at the Illinois State Fair, Mitchell said. So, ha-ha, but now let's get to work. Holbrook pointed to the planned leaders' meeting for Friday and continuing negotiations between the two parties. I think the consensus of our group was not to derail that, he said. I thought the no vote was the better choice in this situation. Shearer could not be immediately reached for a comment. Rauner has said he's determined to fight a corrupt political machine in Chicago and its special deals as he seeks a second term. Rauner spoke at a GOP breakfast Wednesday before heading to the Illinois State Fairgrounds for a campaign rally. Rauner used his veto authority to cut money for Chicago public schools. He said his changes provide more money to 98% of Illinois districts. Democrats said districts may get more money initially, but many will lose funding in a few years under Rauner's plan. Rauner's campaign released two new TV ads Wednesday that call the original legislation a bailout for CPS and blast Democratic leaders for insider deals. The Decatur School District would run out of money in mid-November without state funding, said Superintendent Paul Fregeau. After that, he said they would consider borrowing and other alternatives. Ciro Gordo Superintendent Brett Robinson has said his district would run out of money by early January, while Warrensburg-Latham Superintendent Kristen Kendrick-Weichel previously said her district would run out of money by early next spring. Mount Zion Superintendent Travis Roundcount said the district has solid financial reserves and added the district's administrators have not determined when their crisis point would be. Back at the State House, school superintendents told a House committee that the changes Rauner made to school funding legislation will hurt their school districts. A House Education Appropriations Committee heard testimony Wednesday on legislation that incorporates changes the Republican governor made in an amendatory veto of Senate Bill 1, which aims to get more money to neediest districts first. Rauner said it favors Chicago schools over others and limits state funding flexibility. His amendatory veto cuts $450 million from Chicago and redistributes it. Dan Cox said Rauner's changes are similar to a payday loan. The Staunton school superintendent said his district would get more money now at a higher cost later. Centralia school superintendent Craig Clark said Senate Bill 1 before the veto works for Chicago, Centralia, and Cairo. Illinois has no mechanism for providing state aid with schools opening as early as today. Can't see the eclipse? Tune in online or on TV. By Sandy Cohen, Associated Press, Los Angeles. Ron Dantowitz has been looking forward to Monday's solar eclipse for nearly 40 years. An astronomer who specializes in solar imaging, he's been photographing eclipses for more than 3 decades and will be using 14 cameras to capture the August 21st celestial event. The cameras have solar filters to capture the eclipse in its partial phases, along with custom modifications that can photograph the corona and light wavelengths that are invisible to the human eye, allowing scientists to view and study the sun's temperature and composition in a way only possible during a total eclipse, he said. Dantowitz, who is based at Dexter Southfield School in Brookline, Massachusetts, is lending his expertise to NOVA's Eclipse Over America, airing at 8 p.m. Monday on PBS. That hour-long special, which will incorporate his images, is among extensive coverage planned on TV and online of the first solar eclipse to cross the United States in 99 years. Still, witnessing totality, when the sun is completely obscured by the moon, is best done with the naked eye, not a camera, Dantowitz said, adding that the total eclipse is safe to view without special lenses. Enjoying totality by eye is more rewarding, he said. There is much to see, stars during the daytime, the million-degree solar corona, and seeing the sun blacked out during the daytime. I've been waiting almost 40 years for this eclipse, and although I will be operating 14 cameras during totality, I will certainly take a moment to gaze at the eclipse the same way people have done for thousands of years, with wonder. For those not in the 14 states comprising the eclipse's path of totality, here's a look at some of the viewing opportunities online and on TV. All times are central time. Eclipse of the Century. In partnership with Volvo, CNN plans 2 hours of live streaming, 360-degree coverage accessible in virtual reality through Oculus and other VR headsets beginning at noon. Accompanying television coverage will include reporting from Oregon, Missouri, Tennessee, and South Carolina. Eclipse Over America. The PBS science series NOVA is planning a quick turnaround on its eclipse documentary premiering Monday. Senior executive producer Paula S. Apsel said Eclipse Over America, which delves into why eclipses occur and what scientists can learn from them, will incorporate images of the event from across the country, shot earlier that day with Dantowitz's high-tech cameras. Great American Eclipse. The Science Channel will broadcast its live coverage from Madras, Oregon, from noon to 3 p.m., with commentary from educators and astronomers from the Lowell Observatory. The Great American Eclipse. David Muir will anchor ABC's 2 hours of live coverage, with correspondents reporting from viewing parties across the country. NBC also plans live coverage, with Lester Holt hosting special reports at noon and 1 p.m., featuring correspondents reporting from Oregon, Illinois, Wyoming, and South Carolina. Shepard Smith, will break into typical broadcasting on Fox News Channel from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. to update viewers on the eclipse and introduce footage from NASA and observatories around the country. Solar eclipse through the eyes of NASA. NASA will offer hours of coverage online and on NASA television beginning at noon Eastern. It plans live streaming of the eclipse beginning at noon with images from satellites, research aircraft, high-altitude balloons, and specially modified telescopes. The total solar eclipse. The Weather Channel is kicking off its live coverage at 5 a.m. and continuing throughout the day with dispatches from seven locations along the path of totality. This week at heraldreview.com/calendar. Thursday, Windsor Harvest Picnic, 4 p.m., downtown Windsor, Illinois, 217-962-1037 or 217-459-2312. Pork Chop Dinner at 4 p.m., Ice Cream Social at 5:30, American Legion Opening and Welcome at 5:30. Eagles Wings Gospel Concert at 6:30, Battle Creek Country Concert at 7:45, Carnival and Food. Friday, Music Program, 10 to 10:45 a.m., Children's Museum of Illinois, up to $5. Museum educators lead this interactive and musical program. Spend the first 30 minutes dancing, singing, and learning about beat, tempo, and rhythm. The second part of the program will be focused on making instruments to create music at home. Saturday, Dance Auditions, 10:30 a.m., DISC, 217-423-8212, for Children's Community Cast of the Moscow Ballet's The Great Russian Nutcracker, ages 6 through college age, minimum 1 year dance experience. Dance shoes and attire. Registration at 10:30 a.m., auditions at 11 a.m. DMH expands reach into Monticello. Hospital to build primary doctor facility on site of former Pizza Hut restaurant. By Claire Hettinger, Herald and Review. Monticello. A new primary doctor and facility are set to open in December as Decatur Memorial Hospital extends its reach to Monticello. For some time, we've had this feeling we need to go where customers are at, and Monticello just happens to be one of these locations, Tim Stone, CEO of DMH, said. The almost 4,000-square-foot facility will replace a former Pizza Hut at 777 West Bridget Street. The facility will include 5 exam rooms, a procedure room, and X-ray technology. The groundbreaking will be August 28th, and construction will begin August 29th. The project is estimated to be complete by November 24th. The city of Monticello is very happy to see another healthcare facility come into town, City Administrator Terry Summers said. Adequate healthcare for small communities is important, Summers said, and in Monticello, other people from surrounding towns, like White Heath, Bement, and Cisco, can see a doctor in town instead of driving to Decatur or Champaign. While Monticello is already home to Kirby Hospital and its group of primary doctors, a Carle Foundation Hospital Physicians Group, and a Christie Clinic location on the square, Stone said he is confident there is a need for a DMH facility in Monticello, and Summers agreed. People have been asking for years why there isn't a DMH location in Monticello, Stone said, especially for people who work in Decatur and live in Monticello. To have a facility from the Decatur area is beneficial to the city of Monticello and our residents, Summers said. A certain percentage of our residents work in Decatur, and to see a physician here and in town saves time and money. Kirby Hospital, Carle Foundation Hospital, and Christie Clinic did not return requests for comment. A portion of Monticello is Champaign-Urbana-centric, and a portion is Decatur-centric, Stone said. Champaign-Urbana-based healthcare is in town already, with doctors from Carle and Christie Clinic. Now, It's time for DMH doctors to be in town as well, he said. We are extremely appreciative that we have all these facilities at our fingertips, Summers said. Both Dr. Zachary Shipp and nurse practitioner Megan Shelton, who will practice at the new location, are from Monticello and already work for the DMH system. Stone said DMH seeks out local doctors to serve its rural locations and has had good experiences in the past. It's better for the doctor, the patients, and the community, he said. Experience has led us to conclude that when you place people from Central Illinois in Central Illinois, chances are you're going to retain them, Stone said. In addition to all of DMH's rural sites, announced at a news conference August 2nd, is the use of new technology to communicate better with DMH in Decatur. A new partnership with the Mid-American Emergency Physicians Group will provide telehealth services to sites in Shelbyville, Arthur, and Sullivan to improve access to health care and specialists for rural patients and doctors not located at the main hospital. Before they went forward with the Monticello development, Stone said, he met with local officials. We don't just show up. We go in and talk about what our plans are and what our track record is, he said. Fortunately, we haven't had any communities say we don't want you, so we've been lucky in that respect. Summer said officials are happy to have the hospital. The Angel Tree to Change. Parents to buy gifts for kids with funds. Kevin Barlow. Pantograph. Clinton. A DeWitt County program that helps underprivileged families during the holidays will have a new format this year, its longtime director said. The traditional Angel Tree program will be replaced with a shopping event in early December at Walmart for the children of families in need, Sue Calvert said. We just felt like it was time to make some changes to the program, she said. Calvert describes the Angel Tree program as a community effort that assists low-income families in the county. The program began in the 1970s with the distribution of food baskets. What was then Illinois Power Company, Ameren's predecessor, took it over in the 1980s. In the 1990s, the Samaritan Room, a nonprofit organization set up in 1987 to help meet the needs of children through community action of DeWitt County, became the primary agency. Along the way, the program developed a format in which needy families were paired with donors who supplied gifts, focusing mainly on the children up to age 18. Now, donors will be asked for financial donations instead of gifts. The Samaritan Room will screen all the applicants for eligibility and coordinate programs such as Shop with a Cop and Shop with a Firefighter, she said. School officials will assist with the selection process. This year, parents will be invited to shop at Clinton Walmart on December 5th for toys for the children with money raised from donations. I am committed to the Samaritan Room part of this, but what we're trying to change is the toy part, because it has just gotten out of hand, she said. We were spending up to $200 per kid, and we have to change it, because we don't have those kinds of donations coming in anymore, she said. We don't have the manpower to do all of the shopping and sorting and all of that. Now, she said, the parents will pick out the gift, most likely a toy, first. In previous years, up to 500 DeWitt County children have been helped on an annual basis, Calvert said. Jailed Man Arrested on New Sexual Assault Charge by Tony Reed, Herald and Review. Decatur. A Decatur man about to face trial on charges of kidnap and torture was arrested in his jail cell Tuesday and booked on a new charge of rape. Demariel T. Cunningham, 36, was arrested on a preliminary charge of aggravated criminal sexual assault and unlawful restraint dating to the early morning hours of October 28, 2016. His arrest followed the release of laboratory results, which police said linked Cunningham to the crime through his DNA. Preliminary charges are subject to the approval of the Macon County State's Attorney's Office. Cunningham is already being held in the Macon County Jail and faces a Macon County Circuit Court jury trial September 11th after pleading not guilty to charges of aggravated kidnapping, inflicting harm. Cunningham is being represented by an attorney from the Macon County Public Defender's Office, which has a policy of not commenting on pending cases. Prosecutors said Cunningham and another man, Charles E. Hill, 57, held a 29-year-old Decatur woman against her will for 2 days and tortured her because they thought she knew the location of hidden crack cocaine. The men are accused of using a hot metal object and a baseball bat to injure and terrorize the woman, who was also kicked in the face. Hill, who is pleading not guilty to the same charges in the incident as Cunningham, is set for a pretrial hearing October 5th. The new rape charge against Cunningham is outlined in a sworn affidavit from Decatur Police Detective Jeremy Appenzeller. He said a 37-year-old woman told police a man she didn't know had kept trying to talk to her while she was visiting a friend's apartment in the 1500 block of North Church Street. She said she was followed outside by this man when she left the apartment in the early hours, and he then grabbed her by the hair, put a hand around her throat, and warned her not to scream. She said she was then dragged into a neighboring empty building. Once inside the vacant building, she was beaten by the man and then sexually assaulted by the man after she was restrained against her will and kept inside the building, the affidavit said. Appenzeller said it was samples taken at the time from the woman using a sexual assault kit that led to the recent DNA profile match with Cunningham. He remained jailed Wednesday night in lieu of posting $200,000 bond. Decatur High School's Run and Reds Legacy Endures by Valerie Wells, Herald and Review. Stephen Decatur High School, once the flagship high school located downtown, was, either affectionately or otherwise, called Decatur's most pretentious public building. The Decatur Civic Center now sits on the land that was occupied by the school, once simply called Decatur High School. Its physical size was impressive, and its memory still has an emotional gravity that spans back generations for those who fondly recall their Run and Red days. The building cost $160,000 to build in 1909, and its first graduating class in 1912 consisted of 123 students. The construction would cost about $4 million today, still a bargain. Decatur High School sports teams were successful and legendary, with the basketball team ruling over Kintner Gym. The games even drew cheering fans from the competing high schools of Eisenhower and MacArthur after they were built in the late 1950s. Decatur High's Run and Reds reigned supreme for years, winning state championships in 1931, 36, 45, and 62. The first three were won under Gay Kintner, an Illinois Basketball Coaches Association Hall of Famer for whom the gym was named. A fire in 1970 destroyed part of the building, and it was never repaired. In 1975, the last class graduated from the downtown location, and the school, by now renamed Stephen Decatur High School, moved to a new building on East Mound Road. The downtown building was razed in 1977 to make way for the Civic Center, and the Mound Road building continued to serve as a high school until it was repurposed into a middle school in fall 2000. It served as a high school again briefly during the high school renovations, housing students from Eisenhower and then MacArthur while their buildings were under construction. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Herald and Review for Thursday, August 17th, 2017. Please stay tuned.